The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Johnny. Seen the film? No. Un homme? Oui. On le connaît pour de vrai? Non. Il est à la télé? Oui. On l'aime bien? Pas trop. Il est beau? Non. Il a des cheveux? Non. Il est dans une émission? Non. Je sais. Il est dans une pub? Oui. Le gros type pour la pub des pâtes? Ouais.
Hello everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you, continuing in our French Female Filmmakers of February. Today we'll be discussing 2011's Tomboy, directed by Celine Sciamma. But before we do that, let's do this, a little segment I like to call Who is Talking? This is Ruben.
This is Patrick. Hey, how's it going, everybody?
Hi. This is Basil.
Hello, this is Ilya.
The core four. No guest hosts today. Second guest host.
Yeah.
Who needs them?
Beat it. Beat it, punks.
We do. That's who.
That's who. Yeah. We like we them, do. Actually.
We need them. A lot.
Please come on our podcast.
Another thing we're going to be discussing is movies that we've watched recently that we didn't like or did like pretty strongly. In another segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements.
Alright, I am going to herald one of the ESPN 30 for 30 documentaries called The Price of Gold. Yeah, this is
I watched that too.
It's the one about Tanya Harding. Mostly about Tanya Harding and Nancy in the Nancy Kerrigan incident. But yeah, I remember all this stuff vaguely from when I was a child, like just seeing it covered in the news, but I didn't realize like what a fascinating character Tanya Harding actually was at the time. And watching this, I was just like, wow, she is like, I don't know if you could have written a more like layered character than Tanya Harding, because I was really fascinated by her throughout the whole thing. And it was just like there were just several weird layers to her that I really enjoyed. There were also some like kind of crazy wrinkles to that story too, like the fact that Nancy Kerrigan didn't end up winning the gold, even though that seemed like the most like narratively satisfying way for that story to end. It was just like, oh no, she didn't win the gold. The judges kind of screwed her over. It was just like, wow. I don't know where the story's going to go next. But it's a good one. It's one of the best 30 for 30 documentaries I've seen. I think I put it, if not in the top 10, close. I think it may have like just cracked the top 10 of the like 60 plus 30 for 30 documentaries I've seen. So
Jesus,
it's in. Yeah, I've watched a lot of them, but yeah, it's a good
They've
one.
They've really gone above and beyond their name.
Well, apparently they're doing it in like volumes now, so there's like volume 1, volume 2, and now they're on volume 3, so they're gonna have like 90 of them by the time they're finished.
Yeah, what I took away from that documentary is that I really don't like Nancy Kerrigan.
She deserved it.
Yeah, I just, everything about her seems so like bleh. I didn't, like, who shouts why when they get hit? I mean, it's just so stupid.
Oh, man.
That's probably what I would say.
My opinion is that...
What is happening to me?
My opinion was that this was all orchestrated by the figure skating organization so they would get more viewers, which totally worked out super well for them. Because apparently this was one of the most watched television events in history. And who cares about ice figure skating usually? So, worked out fine.
Yeah, I was going to say that theory, I mean, is probably completely untrue, but it would be... it would make a little bit of sense because it sure did make a lot of care, people care about something that they normally have zero interest in.
Yep.
That's true, yeah.
All right. Man, I have a lot of things I could denounce and nothing that I can really herald. I'm going to go ahead and... Boy, oh boy. yeah, I didn't watch very many good movies this week. I guess I'll go ahead and denounce a movie that I know Patrick likes. And denounce Galaxy Quest. I wasn't expecting to dislike it. I thought I would like it quite a bit, actually. I saw it a few times when I was a teenager, and I really liked it. And one morning, I was just having some breakfast, flicking through some Netflix, and I was like, oh, Galaxy Quest, I haven't seen that in forever. People keep talking about it recently because of poor Alan Rickman. I'll give this a shot. And then I was pretty on board at the beginning. I thought Tim Allen was pretty fun and slimy when he's like showing up super late, but then when he does show up, everyone, like all the audience people, super like him. He's like, yeah, I'm the commander. What's up, guys? But once it transitions into them like actually living out the Star Trek thing, I didn't like it almost at all. And at first I was like, just going along with it, I was like, well, I'm watching this movie. This is a movie that's happening. But then about a little under an hour into the movie, I was like, wait, I haven't been enjoying this for a really long time. Like, why am I still giving it credit? And so then for the last like half hour of the movie, I was just really irritated. But it made me sad. I wanted to like it.
Yeah, I think the nostalgia factor is still pretty strong for me on that one, because
that's fair.
Maybe it is for Basil too, except for he has reverse nostalgia.
That's true. Where I just hate everything I used to like.
I still love that line reading that Alan Rickman gives when he has to do the famous line, but he has to change it for that store that they're opening, and he's like, "By Grandpa's hammer, what a savings." He's just so angry at having to deliver that line. It's great.
Yeah, I think that I would probably have enjoyed the movie at least maybe even like three plus stars worth if it was just a movie about those characters like hanging out and what is it like to be sort of an aging star or whatever who is stuck in one character and their audience won't let them play anything else. But once it becomes like an actual action Star Trek movie, I didn't think the action was very good, and it goes on for a real long time. But
yeah, I'm gonna also herald a 30 for 30 documentary because I didn't watch anything else last week, You Don't Know Bo,
yeah,
about Bo Jackson, and I have to say, I wasn't even sure if I really liked the way the documentary was made all that much, although it was kind of cool because, like, the way they kind of framed Bo Jackson narrating his own story was interesting, I felt like. And but it was mostly just footage of him being super awesome at so many things that was really outstanding. And I also had not really heard of him, having not really, you know, had much interest for either football or baseball or American sports really up until like a couple of years ago when I started getting really into the NBA. So a lot of his story was new for me, and it sure is a pretty cool story. And also probably one of the best commercials I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It was pretty great. I really liked it. But yeah, I don't have really much to say on the filmmaking aspect of it, which I'm, you know, in general in 30 for 30 isn't really the main draw, I would say.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
But the story was really cool, and like, you know, as a way to learn about it, it was pretty dope. So I definitely recommend it in that sense.
He was my favorite character in the NES game Tecmo Bowl.
He's
Raiders.
Yeah, he's legendary.
He's unstoppable.
Yeah.
It's true. You just hand the ball to him, and then
he's a cheat code.
run over everyone
to the house. Yeah, he's from a town very near where I grew up also, and actually my high school plays the high school that he went to every year in football too, so.
Right, yeah. I mean, the coolest part about it, I thought, was when he said that he plays football as a hobby, which, yeah. Like, professionally, which I thought, just in light of the whole Super Bowl thing, I was like, oh, God, that's just such an awesome thing to say. It's just such a slap in the face to everyone that takes that so seriously. I really like that. So, yeah, pretty cool.
Pretty awesome.
Taking a page out of Basil's book from, I believe, last February as well, I'm going to denounce an entire array of films.
Nice.
He denounced the Portland International Film Festival last year, and I'm going to denounce the Oscar shorts this year, other than World of Tomorrow, which was a rewatch, and therefore not the kind of thing that I normally talk about. There was one film that I liked, and I gave it my lowest level of liking, which is 55 out of 100, and everything else varied from slightly watchable to unbelievably terrible, including a film that will for sure make my bottom 10 of the year and makes me kind of sad that it will, because unlike normally the films that are on my bottom 10, which I feel like I have a stronger reaction to, this is just your sort of basic storyless, poorly animated film that seems like a first run at an advertisement for a longer film before they like finesse it and like make actual jokes, as opposed to this, which doesn't even really make any sense.
Yeah, and it feels like a what's the word, like an alpha testing, like they're using some new software that they hadn't tried before, and they're like, oh, here's like a thing we put together to show off like this kind of stuff you can do with this software.
And then someone from the Academy was like, let's nominate that.
It's actually, this one's not nominated. It's one of the, I guess, like runner-ups in that one. Although there's certainly, like, could the live-action shorts, they just showed the nominees, but the animated, they showed the nominees plus some other ones, although there were some pretty bad nominees as well.
That's true.
So yeah, it was pretty frustrating, especially because last year the animated ones, I thought that the bigger picture and Me and My Multan, however you pronounce the name of that bike, were really good movies. And I was kind of excited, especially for the chance to actually catch the live action ones. But yeah, they were pretty uniformly bad. The worst one of the nominees was the live action one that I think I, you know, described as being absolute proof that the Academy will nominate anything that takes place during war just because it takes place during war, because it literally uses an empty swing to like represent like a lost childhood. And I was like, well, This is like a... Whenever swings were invented, that's how old this comparison is.
Yeah.
This symbolism.
It was like the very first time someone saw an empty swing after previously having seen a child in it. They're like, this is a poignant moment. You haven't seen the documentary shorts yet, right?
They didn't play those here.
Yeah, I think they're going to. I mean, at least in Portland, they haven't played here yet either. And I think they're going to play them in like a week or two because there's still a lot of time before the actual Oscars.
Yeah, I know I've seen.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, I've seen the documentary shorts played at the Edge in the past. So.
Yeah, they definitely played here last year. So I'm guessing that in a couple of weeks, they'll like switch out the live action for the documentary at the theater.
I don't think they're gonna play either of them after this week. Both of them, when I went to go see it, there was me and one other person.
Oh, so. That's sad. The animated one was like basically sold out when I saw it.
Did the other person cry when he saw that swing? Be like, hey, no. This reminds me of my own childhood.
I talked to him actually briefly afterwards because. We went to go see them both in one night, and they accidentally screened the wrong one first. And so then they were screening the live action again, and we both bought tickets to both. And they were nice enough to give us this. The best part of the experience was they gave us our money back and a free ticket for another time.
Nice.
And so we talked about it a little bit, but we just talked about the one that I liked. He was like, did you like any of them? I was like, I thought this one was okay. And then I talked about what I liked about it.
Nice. I was very tempted to talk to the person sitting next to me because they were like writing down the names too. And I was like, oh, I wonder if they have a letterbox. Like,
yeah. I was using since it was just me and one other person, I just used my phone in between the shorts and logged them right away.
Nice.
It would be disappointing if they were just like writing a grocery list or something like that.
Get milk, eggs, nutmeg.
The Portland International Film Festival starts on Friday. I hope I don't have to denounce it again this year.
this festival, why do they keep having it?
I mean, this year, I mean, I guess what you get to see will probably be by directors who you already appreciate, though.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of stuff that was, like, either, like, stuff by directors you hadn't seen stuff by before, or directors who you already didn't like Xavier Dolan.
Yeah, although Dolan was just, like, it wasn't actually at the festival. I just also put it.
Just around the same time.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's true. There were this year they got... a bunch of directors that I really, really like, so I'm pretty excited. Last year, I think it was mostly just stuff by people I'd heard of or movies I just picked based on the picture and a little bit of the plot or whatever. Or having heard of it from various other critics that turned out to be wrong.
Make sure to bring your sad trumpet sound to the festival.
It's a common theme on this podcast.
Do it.
How wrong the critics are.
Get one of those like soundboard.
They're not wrong
things.
Anymore.
Yep.
After the second canon, we blew them all up.
That's true.
Now they're dead now. Wrong.
But then again, I guess if we follow that through to its conclusion, we're all dead as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's how Inglourious Bastards work.
Oh, well.
Except for Ilya, he can be Brad Pitt.
No, everyone was labeled in the video. Somebody. He was
Sariana's black friend.
I don't remember
friend.
His name. Yeah. He was my boyfriend.
Did he blow up also, or did he get out? I don't
No,
remember.
I think the implication is that he burned too.
It doesn't show. It technically doesn't show the two shooters or him dying, but it
was heavily implied.
I guess they're both back in there, and then it cuts to outside and it explodes.
Yeah.
So And then we don't see them again?
Well, yeah, I know the two shooters died because they had dynamite strapped to their legs. So
yeah.
They were planning on dying. That was their mission.
Eli Roth, what a hero.
I can't remember what someone said, but I thought we were about to stop talking for this, and I was going to say, speaking of things not being what they seem, so I'm just going to continue to use the transition, even though we're way past the moment when it would have made sense. I believe this was Patrick's pick, so he's going to give us the old plot-a-rooney.
All right. Well, this movie is... It follows a character I...
This movie is not It Follows. You watched the wrong movie.
No. This movie follows, as I was saying, it follows a character whose real name is Laure, but she defines herself as Mikhail when she meets other children in the movie. It's basically her moving into a new apartment with her family and basically introducing herself to this other group of children as a boy, even though biologically she is a female. So I guess it's not clear exactly which gender she has chosen, although by the end, for most of the movie, she identifies herself as a boy, and it's kind of her interacting with this group and kind of going through the rigors of, you know, trying to interact with them as a boy, and also kind of hiding that from them the whole time. And eventually somebody finds out, and it kind of blows up. And that's pretty much all that happens in the movie.
It's true.
It's not made wholly clear, but I think for clarity's sake, for the rest of the podcast, let's assume that Mikhail is trans and that Laure is a dead name, and we will refer to Mikhail as he and him from now on.
Yep. I'll believe that. Although
if we
jump to the end of the movie, the character also introduces themselves as Laure at the end of the movie as well. So
yeah, we'll talk about what that ending means.
Yeah, we can talk about that. We can get to that. But yeah. So Basil.
I like this movie. I'd almost say that I like it a lot. I think that there's a real nice structure to it in terms of it feeling sort of episodic and moving in kind of a naturalistic way, and that it gets like children at play in a way that's pretty fun and believable and sort of nostalgic for me. Made me wish that I played 20 questions more often, because it's a real fun seeming game. And that there's so many moments that, because of the underlying plot of the movie, end up being really, really tense, because it seems like, you know, there's the obvious motivation that Mikhail doesn't want to be, like, quote unquote, found out, and the, like, whenever they're playing physically, there's always the possibility that that could happen, and that gave those scenes, like, a really interesting and intense feeling for me. And that then once the inevitable happens, like, you kind of can't have this movie with this plot and not have it sort of blow up at some point. I thought they handled it as well as they could, sort of, but that it's, I don't know, something like this is always going to feel like after things are somewhat, like, I don't want to say low stakes exactly, but kind of, that then when the bigger drama starts to happen, it always will feel a little too much for me, I guess, that something that was so kind of low key has to become kind of higher key. It's hard for me to fully jump into that emotion once that happens.
Yep. I agree with what Basil said about how the movie handles kids. Like, I thought that was the strongest part of the movie by far, and it deals mostly with that. I feel like it gets pretty slippery on, like, very, like, unclear where the movie's heart is sort of at, especially because of the ending, because I feel like there's a way of reading that which kind of very, like, is very confusing, and it kind of goes against what, like, the movie seems to be going for at first. Like, I am not sure whether the movie feels like Mikhail is trans or genderqueer or some other gender. It's not really made exceptionally clear, but I also feel like it is, like, sort of obviously clear in the beginning, and then it kind of, like, doesn't about face at the ending. And I also feel like there's ways, which I'm kind of curious what you guys thought about the ending and how, like, you felt about the movie in general, because maybe there's a way of seeing that as in a more positive way. But I actually kind of disliked the ending a lot, and that made kind of left it on a very sour note for me. So I'm like kind of unsure of what I felt about it because of that, because I did feel like the kids interacting, especially Mikhail and his sister interacting, was so done so well that I felt really bad when the ending was kind of bad. Yeah.
Yeah, I liked the movie, and I also had issues with the ending. I think the way to read it where it's not that thing is Mikhail has been forced into this situation, mm-hmm. and he doesn't know how to reclaim his real identity at that point, but I still have problems with it because of the ambiguity and because of how easy it is to walk out of the film and be like, oh, Mikhail isn't trans, Mikhail is just a confused girl or something,
yeah.
Which and that confusion is represented, you know, in other places as well. Like, when I went to go log this on Letterboxd, the movie is described as about a young girl who pretends to be a boy, which is, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's about a trans boy. It's
yeah.
I don't think it's like Victor Victoria. This isn't about drag. And I feel like some of the scenes of Mikhail, like, looking in the mirror and touching his body and, like, the sort of confusion, like, especially, like, him kind of, like, pressing on, like, his chest in a way, like, made me feel like, yeah, this is about a trans boy. And I feel like the ending, yeah, leaves that weirdly open in a way that I agree, I didn't like. I probably, yeah, would have loved this movie if it weren't for that. It definitely took me back a bit.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much agree with everything you guys have said. I felt the same way. I felt that the heightening of the stakes toward the end felt a little, I guess, melodramatic in a way. Like, some of it just felt a little too heightened, especially the scenes with the mother and the way that she handles the situation. Just felt like a little too, I don't know exactly how to explain it. I wanted to say, like, exploitative, but it's not really exploitative. It's more just, like, I don't know, her reaction seems so much more over the top than everything else that's happened in the movie. Everything to that point has been kind of, like, you know, low-key, and her reaction feels like it belongs in a different movie. Like, it's a more, like, dramatic movie about the same thing. But yeah,
did you like the movie?
I did. Yeah, I did. Overall, okay. I would say it's a very well shot, and it's very well acted as well. I absolutely loved the actress that plays Mikhail's little sister.
Jean.
She is hilarious, and you can kind of see this. I don't know. It's this, like, quality of a like older person inside of her too. Like she almost feels like a middle-aged woman, like gossiping at certain points.
She's an old soul. Yeah.
She's so funny though. But yeah, I did overall like this movie, but like you guys said, also had issues with the way that it ended. I was gonna say,
I guess since that's where everyone is sort of heading, I didn't, you know, to jump right into that part, I feel like I didn't know how to take it either, but I think I was maybe slightly more generous than Ilya and Ruben, and that I thought it was trying to be more like sort of socially commenting that this is like a group of people who don't have the language or like awareness of trans as a thing to like know how to embrace that. That like, you know, if there's like a group of people who have never heard of this concept or are like super unfamiliar with it, then the mom's reaction sort of makes sense as like just assuming that Mikhail is pretending and that like is sort of slightly hurt by that, and that is like, well, you can't just pretend for the rest of your life. That's not how life works. But and so it sort of makes that reaction make sense, but at the same time I did sort of like wonder where the filmmakers are coming from in that, like, because I agree with what Ruben said, that so much of the rest of the movie seems really sensitive to that fact and seems to be portraying Mikhail as pretty tortured and like sort of only feels comfortable, you know, being Mikhail, that, you know, that having to be Laura, oh, I mean, not Laura, but Lore, is like the pretending, and that the comfort that Mikhail feels hanging out with the new friends and, you know, playing football and flirting with Lisa and all that is sort of so palpable and so real that I didn't quite think that the filmmakers were trying to undermine that at all in the ending. Like, that didn't make sense to me, that they would be like, oh, but it was just like a thing and now it's like that phase is over.
I mean, that's not what I was saying.
Sure.
I was saying that it's too ambiguous for my taste. Like, I feel like, yes, when it came to that ending, I was like, oh, I think the reading here is supposed to be Mikhail doesn't know what to do and has been forced into a situation that he's just like, I guess, yeah, has gone into pretending to be a girl when he's actually a boy, mm-hmm. you know, in a kind of interesting inversion of how some people probably think of trans identity, but that it doesn't land.
Yeah.
I do. In a way that...
Yeah.
Yeah, the movie. Yeah, the movie doesn't really put its foot down on that point. It kind of like throws it up in the air, and it's just like, "What do you think?" And then it's
right.
That's a little too like wishy-washy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that the fact that he's still dressed as Mikhail definitely, at least, supports it somewhat. Like I feel like the ending would be very obvious if. He was like still wearing the dress and was like, "Nice to meet you, I'm Lore." And then Lisa's like, "Oh, nice to meet you, and now we're friends," or whatever.
He does reject that symbol and throw it off and leave it in the woods. So there is that to point to.
I mean, the movie ends like, well, the way before that is super depressing. Like, it's just super depressing for Mikhail. Like, all the worst things have happened. Now he has to go to school living with those people day in and day out that just made it super clear that they think that he does not belong with them because of, like, they don't understand and they don't want to and they think it's disgusting and whatever, like, all that stuff. Then he gets to, like, I thought there was, like, an interesting scene where his brother was born. right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like,
that part made me really sad.
And I'm just like, he's looking at him, right? And like, this guy is gonna, like, he's gonna get to, like, do boy stuff and whatever, and it's cool, and everyone will not question him, and I have to, like, go through all this nonsense just to, like, be myself, you know, and hide from everyone. I thought that was, like, a really poignant way to end this, actually. Totally unnecessary to kind of drag Lisa back into this and have them end this on, like, a way which is, like, you know, like, weirdly, like, hey, hopeful, maybe this will work out kind of thing. Because I'm like, well, this not, no, it won't. And this is the only thing that will help Mikhail is probably, like, a lot of time and maybe a bunch of these kids not being in his class anymore and maybe moving to a different school at some point, you know, like, again, that's maybe, yeah. And like, but not like, oh yeah, let's just, you know. And then, like, the way it ends on Mikhail smiling and, like, it's just such a weird note to end it on. I felt like it hit all the wrong, like, things in that measure. It was maybe possible for Lisa and Mikhail to meet and for it to just be really just weird, and Mikhail to just for Mikhail to say it in a way that does not make him like it, you know. But, like, the way he says "I'm Lar" with this weird little smile on his face and whatever, that was just like, I'm not sure where how the movie feels about this moment. Mm-hmm. I feel like the movie feels way too hopeful about this moment when it really shouldn't be.
Yeah, and I also think it's maybe pertinent that when Mikhail makes the, like, the phallus out of clay, that where he hides it is in this little thing that I think that's, like, his teeth that are in there or something.
Baby teeth.
And I was like, that seems like a weird symbol right there, because those teeth are, you know, like, baby teeth. Like, they're something that's transitory to his body and that he no longer has, and it's like he's grown out of them. And, like, putting that in there with those teeth seems to kind of support the idea that it's something, that it is just like a phase, like it's something that he's going through, and that
that can open up a whole can of worms about genitalia representing gender and stuff like that, and whether or not
I don't know.
You need a penis to be a man, and
sure.
But I mean, it introduces an idea that I think it's not fully ready to deal with. I felt the same way. I was like, this is weird. Like, if he had just, like, hidden it without the, like, baby teeth, like, that would have been a more interesting image to me.
Sure.
Yeah, I did not understand the baby teeth at all. I did not think that was a well-chosen piece of symbolism.
There may be a different way of reading that, but I'm not aware of it. And if you, I don't know, taken in conjunction with that ending, it almost feels like, you know, the movie kind of wants to be saying, like, oh, Mikhail finally discovered that she is a woman or something like that. Like, yeah. I don't know exactly, like, what, but it seems like that could be another way of reading that ending.
I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say that the movie's title, I guess, almost sort of supports that idea, maybe, you know.
Yeah,
maybe this is the story of Lar discovering that it's cool to just be an androgynous woman or whatever.
Discovering true femininity or whatever, which is a much less interesting film.
Right. The whole midsection of the movie, I feel like, plays against that, especially the performance of the kid who plays Mikhail is so good.
Really good kid acting in this movie.
That's true.
Sure is.
I feel Ruben and Ilya were gonna,
for a moment where I thought where the movie kind of was, like, really good at making, like, a more sort of quasi political statement about gender was when Jean and or Jean and Mikhail come back to their parents, and Jean just went out with Mikhail for the first time. And they're sitting there, and the parents are asking them what they were doing, and Jean does not say anything for a while. And, like, I'm like, okay, what is this? Is she just going to like, oh, I can't not lie to my parents, so I'm just going to... Yeah. I was like waiting for something like kind of stupid to happen. But then instead, Jean is like, yeah, so we were like playing and there was this boy, Mikhail, and he was really cool, like whatever. And like, he's my friend now. And that was like, that was such a cool way to like, I mean, not to over...
Yeah, and then they both start laughing really sweetly.
I thought that was great. Like, it was their secret, and at the same time, it acknowledged the performative sort of aspect of what, you know, people do when they represent gender, you know, in the first place. And I feel like to have that, like, kind of neatly packaged in, like, a scene like that was really, really good, you know? So, like, that was one of the reasons why I liked the movie. In the beginning,
yeah,
it was
kind of one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
Yeah, especially because I love the implication that it just like Jean is just such an insufferable gossip that she has to say something, and she's like trying to work out like
how to both
like have something to say and not out Mikhail at the same time. It's just like I love that aspect of that character because she's just so like she and the part where she makes up the story about Mikhail like beating up all the other kids whether or not that's true or not, but it's just so and it, she says like all the girls loved him and all that stuff where how she just like embellishes on it and just keeps going with it. It's so funny.
Yeah, it's great. She was being like she was supporting him like in the best way possible. Like what's the best way possible to support someone who's like has a backstory or who wants to represent a backstory is like you play into that backstory, right? You just like help them like build the foundation for their character. You know, that was great. And it was a good example of how, you know, they're really like a very loving kind of sibling. A couple, you know, it's really, really, really nice.
Yeah, I love how you could see the wheels turning.
Which
every time,
bringing it back to what you were saying earlier, makes it so sad if you imagine in the future how Mikhail is probably going to feel about his little brother and like his frustration and jealousy over his given authenticity of his gender representation comparatively.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that we've all been talking about it, I feel like the very final scene feels like a weird potential producer or studio note that's like maybe the original script ended with that really sad scene with the baby and then they're like, this is too depressing. We need something a little lighter.
Yeah, we want kids to watch this movie and not go home crying.
I know that I'm pretty sure this is the same woman who directed Girlhood as well, and I remember Ruben saying that movie also doesn't quite stick the landing in the last act, although I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
It's in a much more major way, I would say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also could be a producer's note because maybe there was kind of a movie about just like girls hanging out, which is like what a lot of the movie was, and they're like, you gotta punch up that third act. It's like make her a drug mule for some reason.
I was trying to go into it without spoiling the movie because I haven't seen it yet, but also
that's what happens in poverty, right? Drugs.
I was also going to point out the I guess like scene of characters dancing to pop music, I guess kind of a Celine Sciamma staple. I don't know. I haven't seen any of her other movies, but it seems like, that's a scene that's got to be in there.
Especially cause there's no score, right? Because that way the music stands out even more.
Yeah.
That scene.
I didn't even notice that there was no score, but that's a good point.
That's
same.
It was a good song too.
I'll point out a cool visual thing that I noticed. So the first shot or shots is a very telephoto lens with focus on Mikhail and then like very out of focus background. And he's just kind of like floating through this like woods or whatever. And, you know, like I guess the sort of obvious reading of that is that he can have this joy when he's sort of separated from the context around him, that when he can ignore the environment, mm-hmm. and when it's all out of focus and it's just him, you know, he's free in essence. And then later when he's in the dress and he's at Lisa's apartment, mm. and everything's sort of about to go down, telephoto once again, but this time focused really hard on the door, and mm-hmm. Mikhail is out of focus, and it's like now the world is in sharp focus, and Mikhail has lost his ability to, you know, literally not be blurry. Mm.
Right. Yeah.
Pretty cool visual rhyming.
Yeah. I mean, those two scenes, of all the scenes, once the, like, dramatic action starts to unfold, that scene and the one with the bully were the two of the most effective for me in terms of, I mean, again, like, the really good kid acting, like, how uncomfortable Mikhail looks just standing in silence next to that kid while wearing the dress or whatever, while you can hear the, like, muffled parent talk through the door, is made me pretty sad.
Yeah. I didn't get to say it before because we started talking about the ending really quickly, but while there are some, like, I guess, larger stakes things that don't quite work for me, like the forced confrontation between Lisa and Mikhail by the boys, mm-hmm. That scene was a little too much for me. I felt like the way that it was able to keep the low stakes sort of going in the reveal, that, like, it wasn't like, I feel like a lot of other movies would bungle this by, like, having, like, the phallus, like, be pulled out of the pants or something like that, in a huge dramatic moment. But instead it's just like Mikhail pushes a boy to defend his sister's honor, and then, you know, and then the boy is then has, you know, brought to confront Mikhail, and it's like, I want to speak to your son. And, like, that's a much smaller stakes way of, you know, sort of everything coming out I liked a lot.
Me too. Yeah, and that was sort of what, in my preamble, that's sort of what I was talking about. Both the, like, the football and the wrestling and the swimming scenes, all of those are, like, fraught with this tension because so much feels at stake, and it seems like any one of those scenes could potentially be the one that sort of, like, becomes the big dramatic thing. And I agree that it's good that none of them actually ended up being that, but that they take on, like, a whole different kind of feeling where it's hard, like, it sort of, like, puts you in the Mikhail mindset where it's, like, so much fun to watch them all goofing around, but at the same time there's this underlying anxiety where you can't fully embrace how fun it is compared to the scenes with him and his sister or whatever, because there's this, like, tension and fear that it's all gonna go very wrong very quickly.
I also thought the way the movie handled the parents was interesting, especially, I guess, the mother, because she gets a much more story in this than the dad, with which it starts. Mm-hmm. So in the beginning, I was like, okay, so this is, like, an interesting way to show how, like, a family can sort of support their kids in how they want to be perceived, but also, like, how much they still cling to their, like, very precious idea of what their kids should be like, you know? And I thought it was interesting, like, up until the ending, I was pretty sure, you know, that the way that the mother talks to Mikhail when she's, like, outing him, like, to the mother, to the other kids, I felt like there's that scene where she, like, kind of tells him, like, hey, what do you think? You know, what are you going to do? Just going to walk into school and pretend you're a girl? Like, that's not going to work. Like, and that's like she tells herself that this is really necessary because, like, that's the only that's the only way things can work, and I'm being a good mother for doing this. You know, like, she's very convinced of that, but I was like pretty sure the movie is like taking her to task for this. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought it was really subtly done that, like, yeah, well, she's using arguments that make sense to her because she thinks really what this really is about is her also wanting for Mikhail to be actually a girl, you know, like that scene where she like pulls the dress over him like really hard. That was like, well, mm-hmm. this is more like what about what you want, less of what about Mikhail really needs, to be honest. Like,
yeah, I mean, even sort of mm-hmm. early on, we're given like this hint. It's like, yeah, they let Mikhail have overtly masculine signifiers, but then like every time that Mikhail does something that might be interpreted as feminine, like the mom's like really excited about it. It's like, oh, you have a female friend? Nice. Yeah. And it's like, comes back with makeup, it's like, it looks great on you.
Yeah.
You look lovely. Yeah, I thought that scene was really effective in like how obviously embarrassed Mikhail is in trying to hide his face with the hoodie, and the mom is like, oh, what's on your face? Oh, you look so pretty, or whatever. But I think that, yeah, the scene, what makes it extra sad is that, like, the scene outside between, I think it's between the scene with the bully and the scene with Lisa.
Yeah.
The mom's like, I'm not doing this because it's what I want. It's like what has to happen. And I think that there is like a real sadness to that because it is like clearly what she actually believes. She's like, oh, like once you go to school, you're going to be sitting in a desk and some teacher's going to say, Lore, Lore, and then no one will say anything if you don't admit that that's who you are. And like for her, her view of the world and its possibilities are so small that she can't think of a different way to do it. So she's like, this is what we have to do. And in a way, what makes it super sad to me is that she clearly thinks she's like protecting her daughter by doing this. That's like, you have to say this now because it's going to be worse for you later, and doesn't see like a possibility outside of this like pretty obvious like binary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
But
talking about something that's not gender.
Yeah.
One of the things that I liked about the movie was the way that it was able to subtly indicate class markers in a way that felt very woven in, that I liked. Like, there are a bunch of little moments. Like, the first one that I noticed was when John says, we had a picnic inside because we didn't have a table. And, like, she sees that as, like, you know, fun. Like, it's her mother created a world in which that's, like, a thing that they wanted to do, as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, where they're not rich enough to constantly have a table.
Yeah. my mom did similar things growing up pretty poor. It was like, pancakes for dinner. As a kid, like, that sounds amazing. It's like, yeah, it's sweet breakfast food for dinner. Perfect. But it's really because pancakes are super cheap.
There was a later scene that definitely made me think of you and made me think of when you were talking about the 400 blows when the mom gives Mikhail the key to the apartment. It's like, now you can go and come and go as you please. And it's like, as a kid, you're like, awesome, look at all this freedom. But what she's kind of saying is like, your dad works all the time and I'm laid up in bed because I'm pregnant, so take care of yourself.
I wrote that down too because I had the exact same thing. I had my house key on a necklace that I had to wear all the time.
Yeah, I also noted that in that scene, the necklace that she originally gives Mikhail is a, I guess, more like girl color, and Mikhail takes the necklace out and puts in like a like neutral white color to hang it around his neck instead. Yep. Which I thought was like a subtle thing. It's just like, oh yeah, he was just like, I don't like this color though. It's not me.
Mm. I also like the sort of subtle, I mean, this is more back to gender, but the, like, when they're first hanging out, Mikhail's too nervous to actually play football and ends up talking to Lisa, and Lisa's like, I like you, you're different. And then the next scene, Mikhail plays football because he's like, I don't want to be different.
Yeah. I want to be like those guys. Also, I thought it was funny, like, how right they get that the, like, grossness of little boys, like, spitting all the time, and just when they're just playing truth or dare, they're like, you ate your snot or whatever. It's like, oh, you tasted your own pee, and it's just like, let's have a pee, and they're just like taking their dicks out, just like peeing right on the side of the soccer field. And it's just like, little boys are so gross. They just don't even care.
Yeah, I think small children in general, there's something cute about that, because I feel like, you know, in 3 or 4 years, it'd be impossible for them to play truth or dare without it getting super sexual super quickly. But for them, it's like, have you ever eaten your own snot?
Something that was a really cool detail, but I also sort of kind of don't know what to make of it, especially in comparison with, like, the ending and some other things that we talked about, is when they're swimming and Lisa and Mikhail are shivering and all the boys are not cold, which is an inescapable biological truth, but to me not an important indication of gender. Right. And I was like, this is an interesting way of connecting the two of them, but do we really want to connect the two of them, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't even pick up on that, but it's a good point.
When I watched that, I was actually unaware of that fact. I was like, this sure seems weird that why are they showing them shivering? But I guess there must have, now that makes sense, of course.
Men have more blood circulating in their limbs or something.
Yeah.
So they tend to get cold slower than biological women who have more blood circulating in their trunk, in their midsection.
Interesting. I didn't even know that. The more you know. Maybe that explains why in that terrible Tomb Raider reboot, she's constantly shivering. It's really annoying. I was playing that like a week or two ago, and she's constantly just like, ugh.
Yeah. But yeah, the inclusion of that scene is then, I would say, at least kind of questionable.
I mean, it could be intended as a, I don't know. I mean, because I don't remember exactly, but like another attempt to like escalate the tension or whatever, fear of being found out, quote unquote.
Yeah. But it's just like, it's there for like a couple of seconds and it just cuts away to a completely different thing. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it cuts away to the next scene, which I really like, which is when Lisa kisses Mikhail.
Right. Mm-hmm. That was nice.
And like,
that Mikhail, was nice.
Like, can I open my eyes now? And like, there's also like a part of him that doesn't want to because he's like scared of what's gonna happen.
Sure.
I love the way that scene ends, where it's just like Mikhail, you can't really tell what he's thinking at first, but then he just like slowly smiles, like it's just that that slow like, yeah, this is nice.
I wrote down earlier than that about Lisa, this girl has hella game. Like, we can go to my place if you want.
I also wrote down that talking about Mikhail's relationship with his father, there's a part where the father gives him a drink of beer, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a... That's why I was thinking. I was like, oh, the dad like totally gets it, supports the whole thing. Yeah. It's just like letting Mikhail be a
because that's like
boy.
Such a
stupidly
iconic father son moment.
Yeah.
Same with the like opening scene where they're
with the driving,
teaching him to drive.
Yeah, Yeah, no, it definitely seems like the father is more gentle, or at least is of the opinion, like, not necessarily being like, oh, I have a son, but of the opinion to be like, oh, my daughter can act however the fuck she wants.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure that he totally gets it because, you know, he's like, you know, he kind of does the inside out thing where he's like, your mother's going through a lot. You should pretend to be a girl for her. Yeah. Right. It's like, that's not the way that stress should go with, like, young children. It's like, if the parents are stressed, they're the ones who need to handle it. It's not the children's responsibility to tiptoe around the parents' problems.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I guess also, like, it didn't really bother me, but it does sort of play into the, I guess, pretty common stereotype of the, like, the mother has to be the harsh one and the dad, you know, gets to be, like, the fun dad. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I almost said it multiple times for some reason because there's obviously, like, a lot of sort of visual similarities between this and Boyhood. And I almost said Tom Boyhood, and yeah, that reminded me of that again because, you know, Ethan Hawke is like the fun dad for like most of the movie, whereas Patricia Arquette has to like actually lay down the law. But and that's a completely different situation because in that case, Ethan Hawke is actually being kind of a bad dad.
That's true. Yeah, I was gonna say that's one of the things I could relate to most about that movie. I was like, oh yeah. I totally had kind of like a deadbeat fun dad.
Bad dad.
Where like I didn't see him that often, and then every time I did see him, he would try really hard to make us hanging out super, super fun, so I wouldn't resent him for him being a bad father.
Mm. Yeah. Good stuff. I feel like not to get too much into Boyhood, but one of the scenes that I really do like about that film, which I was kind of ambivalent on, is when after Mason and his high school girlfriend have broken up and Ethan Hawke's giving like his long speech about women, which you're kind of like, oh right, yeah, he's it makes sense that Patricia Arquette like didn't stay with him.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna say the scene where they go bowling, which I also like a lot, when like that woman he hooked up with at the bowling, who works at the bowling alley, comes by, and he really gives her the brush off.
Oh, boy.
Poor bowling alley woman.
It's true. Oh
boy, bad dad.
I don't have too many more notes. Mm. I did want to mention, even though it's not necessarily, like, thematically interesting, but just from, like, a character filmmaking standpoint, I really love when, Mikhail finds Jean and she's upset about what happened and getting pushed, and I think he says, did you cry? And she goes, no, I'm brave.
Yeah. That's when he's putting the antiseptic on or whatever, and he says, does it sting? And she says, no, I'm brave.
Yeah. So yeah,
I wrote that down in my notes.
Which is like a nice, I mean, I guess too tied into the theme is, you know, sort of gender expectation reversal for women, that like she's supposed to be like weak and fragile, and she's like, she wants to reclaim being tough. It's tough true. Lady.
Yeah,
the only other thing that I really wrote down was the mustache scene, and I really like the fake voice that Mikhail puts on. Enchanté.
Enchanté. That was so funny.
I don't even remember what you're talking about.
That was cool.
The part where like, cutting the hair.
Yeah, Jean cuts his hair, and then they use the cut hair and make little mustaches. And Mikhail's putting on like a fake like adult man voice, like doing really au revoir, madame.
Being really good at it, and Jean being pretty bad at it.
Yeah,
it's true.
Sean just gets it in her mouth. Yeah,
yeah, it's like hanging off of the side of her mouth.
Yeah.
I guess I'll say along the same thing with like the small stakes that the reveal, if you went into this not knowing what the movie was about, when the reveal comes that Mikhail is trans and doesn't want to get out of the bath, I guess. And Mother first calls him the dead name, I guess you might say at this point. Like, the way that that happens, like, I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, and it comes, like, not right at the beginning, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that maybe the movie, like, could have actually done without, like, revealing it explicitly to the audience. Like, if you, like, just found out, like, through the mother using the dead name and... you know, just the reveal later on, that it could have been fine without it. But I can understand, like, kind of quelling that confusion in the beginning. And like you say, Basil, about several of the scenes, there is that tension where you know, and the, you know, the boys obviously don't. And so there's that, yeah, so I guess it would kind of ruin the tension if you didn't know explicitly what was going on at that point. But yeah, I thought the movie actually could have worked without revealing it explicitly.
I mean, I think it's a challenging moment, so that's why I kind of like it.
Yeah.
For like a number of reasons.
I guess so, yeah.
And I mean, I do think that her his body, Mikhail's body, is very, like, an intricate, like a very, very important part of his, of how he feels about himself. And is constantly something that he's trying to, like, adapt and kind of modify in some way. And so it makes sense to show his body and show the reveal with his body, because it's basically tied into the whole theme of the whole movie. I feel like it's okay for it to also feel a little like, oh, you know, like to kind of be taken aback by it maybe in the beginning. And to, yeah, like Ruben said, kind of feel like a challenging moment. Because it's not supposed to be very comfortable. Because it really isn't for him.
It's true.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
And maybe miss making a shampoo mohawk. Used to do that.
You still could. I can't.
That's
those
true.
Days are over for me.
Yeah.
Oh man, I could make like, yeah, like that guy.
I don't know if shampoo would work for you. You might need some, like, some of these stronger, like, some mousse or something.
Yeah.
Or glue for something that.
Some pomade.
Isn't that what, like, hardcore kids did? It was like they put like literal glue in their hair to make those like really long spikes.
Probably.
I believe it.
Like that.
That sounds like something the hardcore punks would do.
Yeah. I mean, it's like obviously water soluble glue. It's not like super glue or anything, but.
Well, depends on how little money you had.
Yeah, it depends on how much access to that sort of thing you have. If not, you just take regular old glue.
Just super glue your hair up like that.
Real dedication.
That definitely sounds like something.
I like this haircut so much, I'm going to have it forever until I slice my hair up. We didn't mention it at the time, and I wanted to, and I forgot that I think part of what makes the makeup scene interesting is how horrible the makeup actually looks on him. It's just like ridiculous clown makeup, which is exactly how small children do makeup, but like for the mom to be like, oh, you look so lovely, which is like...
Yeah. But then the scene before where they're putting on the makeup is another scene that I feel like needed some more work in order to, like, figure out exactly what they're gonna say here, because, like, he seems into it, and is that, I mean, I want to support if what it's saying is, boys can wear makeup too, because anyone can wear makeup, but if what it's saying is, deep down, Mikhail is actually a girl, then, you know, then I don't like that at all.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't actually. Yeah, my interpretation of it was more just like, I don't know.
The kid likes Lisa.
Yeah, yeah, that's what.
Yeah. That was sort of it. So I was like, I've definitely been in situations where I was like, when I was younger, really excited to date somebody. They're like, hey, let me paint your nails. I'm like, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
that's what you want to do. If it involves, sounds good to me.
Yeah, if it involves you,
or not even
me,
when you're
yeah.
younger.
Yeah,
when
yeah, I still like
you,
that.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, it'd be a great date, hiking.
Oh okay. God,
sounds
no,
good.
I would never do that. I would get my nails painted. That's fine. Carla does it every now and again. But regarding that scene, I thought. It was actually, a lot of it came from the perspective of Lisa also. And for Lisa, this was like, yeah, let's paint our faces. I don't care if you're a boy. This is fun. I'm like,
yeah,
so the movie
makeup
definitely
is fun.
Like took her perspective in that scene as well. So
if I were trained how to use it and I were not broke, I would wear makeup.
Yeah.
It makes you look better.
Unfortunately, I can't
Why wouldn't you wear makeup?
I can't do eye makeup at all because I hate everything that comes within an inch of my eyeballs. That's
oh,
not
God,
my
yes.
own fingers. I just get like panic attacks or whatever. So I will never be able to have anyone paint my eyes. It just I resist so
or
hard.
Or wear contacts.
Yeah, I've
yeah never.
I'm right there with you. I've had that done on a movie set before, where somebody was like doing stuff with my eyes, and I was just like, oh God! I was like freaking out. I was like, no, I can't do this.
Yeah,
there's this dude I went to middle school with, and he had the opposite thing where he had like nothing with that. So he would freak everyone out by just like touching his eyeball.
Like,
class was so gross.
Oh, God.
Oh, man.
That is like, I don't know.
Unsanitary, probably. But
I knew somebody.
Extremely effective.
Yeah, I knew a girl in high school who could do that thing where she like pops her eyes out so they're like bugged out. It was like, blah. Eye stuff.
My aunt could flip like her top eyelid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had friends that did
so,
that. Yeah.
And so it didn't look like she had eyes because like her, like even with her eyes open, it was like the.
Oh God!
It was just the inside of the eyelid.
Oh God!
She used to freak us out when we were younger. But yeah. Well, what she would do is she would take two grapes and she would like peel the grape and then pretend to put it in her eye.
God.
Reminds me of that tweet. The body of Christ eats wafer. Blood of Christ drinks wine. Brains of Christ feel spaghetti.
Yeah. I only have two other notes. One was just another class thing that they're eating their pasta with like almost no sauce.
Oh yeah, that was the real like class marker right there. It was just like they had like.
I was like, I know that feeling when I haven't had a job for like months.
Just a dollop of sauce.
Huh? Stretch that tomato.
And then later I was like getting that sweet Vio money.
Oh yeah,
like the pretty obvious shot of like the mom on the computer.
Yeah,
Vio computer.
I thought that was the dad with the
dad.
Yeah,
the dad has the yeah. But also like, does Sony still make the Vio? I don't know. How old was that computer? Probably.
I think yes, they still do.
They do. Okay, I didn't even.
Sony
know,
still.
I remember when the Vio came out, when it was first like a big thing, and I was like, that was a while ago that laptop was like the big laptop to get.
Right. The cool laptop.
Yeah.
Yep. The only other thing I mentioned was when they're playing some French version of Go Fish that I never heard of.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Where it was like families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Collect the. The daughter of the Baker family.
Well, yeah, I was thinking, I was like, oh, this is like a weird comment on the theme that they're making here. When the dad starts off, he's like, I want the son of something. And I was like, oh, are they trying to like, and then they just go on with family members. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's just like, that's the whole game. I had no idea what game they were playing.
Weird French card games.
Yeah. I also
speaking of games, I wrote down that was a waste of a lot of water when they're just
Oh yeah, just
like
yeah.
Water at each other.
But I also, I didn't understand what the game was that they were playing before, like the first time that Mikhail goes to play with them. There's some weird game they're playing where they have to like run.
It seems like capture the flag, but like slightly different. Kind of, yeah. Like instead of like two teams hiding, it's just two people. And like, I mean, I was able to understand the point of the game, which is one person has to grab the flag or shirt in this case, and then get back to their base before
the other one touches them. Yeah,
yeah.
But it was, like, was you know,
it was like a weird cricket version of capture the flag.
That was definitely like another good like human moment, and then it was like, yeah, I recognize the gender expectations here. It's like Mikhail needs to win in order to impress the boys. He can't lose to a girl, and Lisa thinks that Mikhail is cool, so she's happy to step out of the way.
Yeah.
I bet she would have won though if she tried.
It's possible. She's taller.
Based on everything else we saw, where Mikhail kept winning like wrestling and football matches, women are just better.
That's true.
People were born biologically with those traits are just better.
I was gonna say the moment I think I laughed out loud the hardest at was when it starts on the shot of Mikhail sitting there with like his jacket on his shoulders, and you think he's just like thinking about something, and then he moves and it cuts to Jean, and she's like, don't move, and she's like drawing him, and then it shows her drawing, and it's just like a circle head with like dots in her eyes. I was like, she was concentrating way too hard for that to be the drawing. Oh, I love Jean. She was so funny. All of her songs were so funny. Like, I don't know if that was an actual song she was singing in the tub or if it was just something that she was making up, but it was so funny.
Okay.
All right.
Let's wrap this up. And the way that we do that is I say some things.
Cool.
Saying stuff.
Go.
I say things like, if you're enjoying this podcast, you should subscribe to us using your podcast listening application. You should give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, and you should visit our site and peruse our content and comment on our discussion board. What are your thoughts? If they're really terrible, like some of the thoughts that our friend Sally Jane Black got on his got on her review of the Danish girl.
Yeah.
Don't comment. Just keep that to yourself. Keep that horrible bitterness to yourself. But if you would like a nice explanation about some of these issues concerning a movie that I haven't seen, but I very trust does suck as much as Sally says it does, you know, go and read her review on Letterboxd.com. You probably already have, since it was linked on Roger Ebert's blog.
Yes. Yes.
And is well at this done. Point by far the most liked review on Letterboxd.
Well done.
Chapeau.
What about hats?
Hats off to you, Sally Jane Black.
Yeah. All right. We will see you next time.
Bye.